that CB shucking jazz.
All you racing fans, stand up, clap your feet, I mean clap your heads.
Welcome to the Goat Rodeo.
Live from the CRN studios in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, this is Racing Through History.
Hello, race fans. Welcome to this edition of the Goat Rodeo. My name's Jeff Gilder. I'll be the host. Thank you all for tuning in tonight. We're so happy to see you here and hear you here and have you here and all that. Let's get around and say hello to everybody. Tim, you go first.
Well, me go first, yes. Out here in my little studio, everything is going fine. We had a hot day in Columbia, and we're waiting for the eclipse, and I'm practicing for that already by going in my windowless room and turning out the light bulb.
Are you practicing squinting and stuff like that, too?
No, I went out and bought those special glasses.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right. I want to be able to see it.
They're calling this, for this area here, this is going to be, it's a big deal, man. They're 17 maybe blocked. People may run out of gas. I mean, there could be...
all the bread in the grocery store is going to be sold out. Yeah.
Well, you ought to hear what they're saying about up here. Up to 1 million people, and they're having all the highway patrol in the state's going to be on 26 and 20, trying to keep people from parking there to watch it. And, of course, the good old city of Columbia has jacked up the parking fees for all the parking garages for all the people that are going to be downtown. And radio stations are having special parties that you can come to starting at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Well, they have one
to
Columbia Speedway
there at fairgrounds to watch it.
Yeah, they've got it. They've got an eclipse party at Columbia Speedway. That's where I'd go.
I had not heard that.
Yeah, that's where I'd go if I was there. They got misting fans set up. Food trucks are out there. You just go to Columbia Speedway and watch the eclipse. I think it's a great idea.
All 2 minutes of it.
Yeah, yeah. 2 minutes and 40
two
seconds.
2 minutes and 26 seconds, Jack. Get it right.
Okay,
if you don't talk about it.
Less than 3 minutes.
Yeah. So Coastal Jack Walker's in the house. What's up, buddy?
Hey, man, we got a Carolina race place tonight. Historic race finish coming from up your way, Jeff, from Maryville, Tennessee.
All right, so yeah,
we'll get that.
What year?
1968.
Oh, that's back there. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, Bopper, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Hey, doing good. Good to be here.
Good to have you here, man. Yeah. Good to have you here. What you got on your mind tonight?
Well, we had, of course, I thought we need to give a review and a recap of the Myrtle Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Bell and Bell, Terry Evans, Memorial Night. So we'll talk about that some. And I was real excited about the NASCAR race this week. Not so much the NASCAR race, but the fact that Kyle Larson almost won the Knoxville Nationals on Saturday night and did win Michigan on Sunday. That's spanked him. That was a major moment.
That's cool.
In racing. So.
Yeah. How about you, Hugh? What you got on your mind, buddy?
Just my mind.
That's it.
I wasn't real thrilled with the NASCAR race. Mm-hmm. I'll help Bobby narrate our adventures at Myrtle Beach. And it was an adventure, to say the least.
You should have seen Jack's eye roll when Bobby said he was impressed with the NASCAR race or whatever it was he said.
Jack, I was like, I was about to fall off, man.
Who was it? Said Only saw two laps of it.
Me.
It well, and I said, that's well, you all saw you
had
the
to
whole
see.
Race.
That's all you had
that's
to see.
That's all there was. The rest of it was
well, so, I caught the best part.
Yes, yeah, uh-huh. The only part. The rest of it was so ho-hum, they could have just fast-forwarded all the way through that and shown the last two laps. That's all there was to me. Anyway, yeah, I was glad to see Larson win it. And his car owner... That was part of the best part of the end.
His
of the
crew
thing.
Chief's probably at the chiropractor.
Yeah, the, his car owner liked to kill his crew chief.
I saw
He bent over. He was in the skybox and bent over, shaking his shoulders like a rag doll. Yeah, he's probably been at the chiropractor's office.
Yeah, he's probably had a workman's comp injury.
Yeah, he needed a Hans device to be in the pit box.
Oh, me. Yeah, that was. You saw the best part of the race was the last two laps and all that
and the
aftermath.
Victory lane celebration.
Next, what do you got, Jeff?
Nothing, man. I haven't seen or heard of anything to do with racing.
Otherwise,
well,
occupied.
The
how about Cody? Is he on?
No, there's no Cody.
We don't
tonight.
Have a Cody anymore. Yeah. Well, round up Alex.
The impressive thing. Us being in the South and being historically NASCAR / stock car fans, that's what all of us are. I mean, that's our collective experience and what we know about and what we relate to. But that's not the only kind of racing that there is in the world. That's just all that we know about. So we think it's, you know, we've been told it's the top of the food chain. And it is in terms of exposure. And maybe in terms of purse structure, that is undeniable. In terms of skill and expertise and talent and all that, that's another subject. And if you have ever seen a sprint car on a dirt track, that is something to behold, whether you like it or not. To stand there and watch one go around there is pretty daggone impressive.
Yep.
That is a, I know, I admit that is a foreign, basically a foreign subject in the South. We don't know it for many reasons. It never really caught on here, probably because NASCAR exploded so much here. It just sort of kept everything else at bay. But sprint cars are very big almost everywhere else in the United States. I mean, literally everywhere. Yeah. Even places that you don't think of has racing, they have sprint cars on a grand scale. And the culmination of all of that is this race called the Knoxville Nationals. It's at Knoxville, Iowa. The racetrack at Knoxville, it's the Marion County Fairgrounds, it's its official name. It's also the site of the Sprint Car Hall of Fame, the physical facility, the structures and everything of the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame are on the grounds of Knoxville Raceway. It's in the middle. I've gone to my beloved Google Earth and gone down the street. Knoxville Raceway is in the middle of town. It's a fairgrounds, but it is in downtown Knoxville, Iowa, and you know, the Midwest being the so-called flyover states, they just under everybody's radar. Yeah. I mean, nobody pays any attention to what's going on there.
A lot of sprint cars out in Kansas, and Oklahoma, places like that.
To kind of digress a little bit, local Saturday night racing is huge. It is huge in the Midwest. Places that we ain't never heard, and we don't, because we don't know about it, we think everything's going downhill on the Saturday. That is not necessarily true. It's just we don't know about it. That doesn't change the fact. It just means we don't know. But
sprint car racing doesn't get the national recognition that NASCAR does and IndyCar does.
But you know, for the last couple of years, we went down in conjunction when we went to Daytona for the Vintage Parade. We went over to Volusia County,
yep,
where they were having the World of Outlaw sprint cars there. And it is unbelievable to watch those cars. You can't hardly watch them.
No. Especially
they go
since
pretty
we were
fast.
Sitting
that's
on the
first
on the front
thing.
Row.
There's a blur.
That's the first thing you run into is I can't keep up with the cars, but my eyesight.
Yep.
And
might be a little better on the top row, but when you're down front, it's almost the only thing you can do. We were sitting right close to the flag stand, but we were on the front row, front two rows, and you couldn't watch the cars in front of you. Your eyes just simply would not move that fast.
You can't keep up with them.
You could watch them in the turns and on the back stretch some, but when they got on the front stretch, they were moving so fast, you could not. It was just a blur. You couldn't. Your eyes wouldn't move that fast.
Volusia County is a half mile track. Knoxville, Iowa is a half mile, and those cars at Volusia basically run wide open. If you have to lift, you just go into the back.
Yeah, you're going to the back.
You're going to the back. You go around there, it is like Talladega. It's foot on the floor. One's reflexes, it's like being a fighter pilot. It would have to be. Yeah. You would have to be driving so far ahead of yourself.
Yeah, those
it's
speeds,
incredible.
On dirt. Yeah. Of course, that's something else. The surface of that track, it's called a dirt track, but it's like nothing I ever saw. It's like gray, hard-packed clay. It's slick look. I mean, it's shiny looking, not slick looking, but it's shiny. And during intermissions, they don't go out there and dig it up. They just pack it down tighter. They got big trucks with huge weights on them, and they just get there and roll them in tighter.
Now, Bobby, you said something about the Sprint Car Hall of Fame. Let me give you a little fun fact in case anybody ever asks you this. There is a guy in the Sprint Car Hall of Fame named Ray Tilley. Ray Tilley drove his first race car at Coastal Speedway here in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, when he was in the Air Force. He went back to his home state a few years after that, of Pennsylvania, and started racing stock cars and sprint cars, and he ended up in the Sprint Car Hall of Fame.
Well, that's I'll tell you, whether you know, for the most part, we Southerners, we just simply aren't really. This is all under the radar for us. But my point is, it is an extremely impressive, high degree of skill and all of the above to do that.
And a lot of fans.
And a lot of passionate fans.
Yes.
It is a big deal. And beginning in 1961, the Knoxville Raceway has hosted the Knoxville Nationals, which you can sprint cars, it's just like the granddaddy of all sprint car racers, and sprint cars come from everywhere to try to make this event, and it has tremendous prestige, and as you can imagine, a difficulty in winning, all of the above, and has been won by all the great names. Steve Kinzer has won it 12 times. That's more than anybody. But everybody you've ever heard of, the Swindells and Doug Wolfgang, Bobby Allen, all these guys, sprint car just heroes, have won this race, and it's extreme. It takes a lot. It takes bravado. I'll tell you, guy. It takes bravado to drive a sprint car, because if something goes wrong, it starts out bad and gets worse, as you have seen many of the highlight films. And so you start that. That's in the back of your mind to start with, and you're out there driving wide. It has to be wide open, or otherwise you're going backwards. So I say all of this to say this. In recent NASCAR history, NASCAR superstars that have come through Knoxville are people like Jeff Gordon, who was great as a kid. He'd done all this kind of stuff. Tony Stewart is a graduate of all of this, and now we're seeing Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson won his preliminary event this past Wednesday night at Knoxville. That guaranteed him a spot in the Saturday night finals. He was since he won on Wednesday, he was guaranteed. The only question was, would Chip Ganassi let him race? That was the and so with a lot of fan pressure and social media suggestions and everything, Chip Ganassi relented, and Kyle Larson finished second. Finished second in the Knoxville Nationals, only beaten by Donnie Schatz, mean, if you got to be beat by anybody, that's pretty good. So then, as we all know now, he gets back to Michigan at like 2 or something in the morning and wins that race. Purely on Kyle Larson did not – it was not the car that won the race at Michigan.
No.
That was not the car. It was not horsepower. It wasn't aero. It was none of that. It was the driver. It was the driver won that race. When I said I was impressed, that is impressive. The driver won. It wasn't no kind of mechanical mess. It was not.
No clean air.
None of that mess. It was the guy that wanted it worse and had the talent and the skills to do it. And we haven't seen a lot of that. And, you know, we say, well, Jeff Gordon used to drive sprint cars and Tony Stewart used to. Kyle Larson still does. I mean, he is simultaneously on top of both worlds. That's truly unprecedented.
Yeah, that's almost unbelievable. And to add to that, what's going to become of him and Chip and his race car next year? As of now, I don't think they have a sponsor for that car. How bizarre is that? Somebody that's literally on top of the NASCAR world, and their sponsor has said, "Well, we're gonna sponsor soccer teams next year."
I think you're going to see a lot of sponsor deletions between now and next year.
I think there will be lots of bailouts.
Yep.
Among some of the top dollar sponsors, and to me, the NASCAR, the look of NASCAR is going to be quite different next year. I don't know that it's going to be a bad thing, but it certainly isn't going to be the high dollar sport that it has been. I don't believe.
Some of the sponsors that run those cars at Michigan.
Yeah.
Never heard of them. Mm-hmm. Never even heard of them.
I think there's going to be some real pain amongst some of the big car owners who are used to spending millions and millions and millions of dollars on one race team are going to find that now they're going to have to go back to shopping for stuff and laying off all these high-dollar engineers and wind tunnel experts and all this stuff.
And high-dollar drivers that aren't winning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, high-dollar drivers that aren't winning, that's going on now.
You can go out and hire a William Byron or somebody like that that's got talent.
But I just think that this was a red-letter historical event happened this weekend that it has never – that ain't come close to happening.
Yeah.
Just the same guy almost won the Knoxville Nationals and the NASCAR race the next day. And the other thing, NASCAR needs to be – they need to understand what they're looking at, and I don't know that they do, but this is one of the rare moments they've had in a very long time to create some crossover. Sprint car fans are passionate. They love it. And remember Kyle Larson sold all kind of souvenir stuff just a couple of weeks ago at a little dirt track in Pennsylvania, and he kind of got in hot water over that. Rather than trying to throw him under the bus, this is a throwback to the days when Bobby Allison used to go everywhere and fill up local stands. And
that, embrace it.
Yeah, exactly. They need to figure out how to get on this bandwagon, because this is one of the few instances of lifeblood that's coming into NASCAR.
Yeah, they ought to be promoting it. They ought to be embracing it. Because it's
crossover.
It's the first spark that they've had, coming their way in a long, long time.
Yeah, and I don't know, and I'm just hoping that they understand the depth of what they're seeing, because this can pay dividends. It truly can, because there's going to be crossover fans, and they're going to come to NASCAR, or they might, they could come. This is an invitation, so. I hope they seize on it and recognize what they've got. So let's hope so. Okay, that's my section, my segment. So we can move on wherever you want to, Jeff.
All right, Coastal Jack, take it away.
I can do that. All right, tonight for the Carolina Race Place Historic Race Finish, as I said, we are going to Maryville, Tennessee. The newly paved Smoky Mountain Raceway in Maryville, Tennessee, held a 100-lap late model sportsman race on Saturday night, September 21st, 1968. The race was titled the Del Mar Hayes 100. The race attracted several regional late model sportsman drivers and several Grand National drivers. One of the former Grand National drivers at the track for the 100-lap race was Rex White, who retired from Grand National racing in June of 1964. White was making his first start in a race car in over a year. Red Farmer of Hueytown, Alabama, won the pole position with a lap of 87.378 miles per hour around the half-mile paved oval. At the time, this was the fastest lap ever turned at the track. When the race got underway, Farmer took the lead and held it all the way to the checkered flag on lap 100. At times, it looked like Farmer might be overtaken by Tootle Estes or Bunky Blackburn, but their efforts fell short. There were five minor caution flags during the race. During the early part of the race, track champion L.D. Ottinger of Newport, Tennessee, spun out in the second turn, then hit the guardrail, which ended his day. Also having problems in the race was Sam McQuaig, who blew a tire. Bobby Allison had handling problems. Bunky Blackburn was involved in a wreck and lost several laps in the pits. Joe Thurman retired to the pits after having transmission problems in his 1960 Ford. Ray Farmer won $900 for the victory before 5,500 fans that day. So here's the way they finished. Smoky Mountain Raceway, Maryville, Tennessee, September 21st, 1968, the late model sportsman race. The winner driving the F97, Ray Farmer, Hueytown, Alabama, in the 63 Fairlane, followed by the number 39 of Friday Hassler, Chattanooga, Tennessee, 65 Chevelle. George Boney, Nashville, Tennessee, in a 64 Chevelle. Bob Burcham, Rossville, Georgia, a 64 Chevelle. Chet Williams, Morristown, Tennessee, a 61 Ford. James Hilton, Inman, South Carolina, a 64 Chevelle. Coming in seventh, 1960 NASCAR Grand National Champion Rex White, Silver Spring, Maryland, a 64 Chevelle. Jack Martin, Franklin, Tennessee, a 64 Chevelle. Bob Leach, Stone Mountain, Georgia, a 64 Chevelle. Coming in 10th, Hank Maxwell, Newport, Tennessee, a 55 Chevy. Bill Smith, Alexander, North Carolina, a 56 Ford. Bunky Blackburn, Fayetteville, North Carolina, a 64 Chevelle. Tootle Estes, Knoxville, Tennessee, a 64 Fairlane. 64 Fairlane. Jim Arnold, a 62 Chevy. Max Ledbetter, Franklin, North Carolina, a 64 GTO, who was 15th. Followed by the number 12 of Bobby Allison, Hueytown, Alabama, a 64 Chevelle. Joe Thurman, Rocky Mount, Virginia, 64. Ed Mendenhall, Knoxville, Tennessee, a 64. Tommy New, Tucker, Georgia, a 65 Dodge. Butch Eads, Murfreesboro, Tennessee, a 60 Chevy. Charlie Binkley, Hendersonville, North Carolina, a 63 Ford. Joe Ed Neuber, Knoxville, Tennessee, a 64 Chevelle. L.D. Ottinger, Newport, Tennessee, a 55 Chevy, which I think was a misprint. I think I had to be a Chevelle by then. Sam McQuaig, Columbus, Georgia, a 63 Ford. And the 25th and final car, George Gosnell, Zarcona, North Carolina, a 59 Chevy, North Carolina.
Easy for you to say.
That's the 57th state, North Carolina.
North Carolina.
So, well,
Bobby, I see you spying over here.
Well, I can't see.
What do you see?
I cannot see nothing. I've got to have cataract surgery tomorrow.
Hey, I know about that.
I've had drops and mess in my eyes. I can't see nothing.
I know all that.
I really can't.
I know that feeling.
I'm going by.
And I've got that coming up, too, and I don't want to hear any more horror stories.
But I want
this. The Grand National race in Martinsville was the next day. So several of these drivers, like James Hilton and Allison and a couple of those, were in the Grand Astor race at Martinsville. So that's the reason, one of the reasons they went to Maryville Saturday night.
Just to warm up.
Yep.
Incidentally, I was just thumbing through my Smokey Unick book last night, and I love his chapter on 50 good drivers and one butt. That's the name of one chapter. But one of Smokey's 50 greatest drivers is Bunky Blackburn.
Yeah, I like Bunky Blackburn.
Smokey did too.
I remember when he used to race at Coastal Speedway here in Myrtle Beach. He was probably one of my first favorite drivers that I pulled for, driving number 12.
Yeah, from Fayetteville, North Carolina.
And his family or something, he was connected with Champion Speedway in Fayetteville. He had a connection there. As a family member or somebody owned the Speedway.
I noticed if you didn't have a 64 Chevelle, you wasn't in to run it.
Yeah, 64 Chevelle was a big car, but the Chet Williams from Morristown finished fifth in a 61 Ford. Well, the 63 Fairlane won the race for that farmer. For that
but
race.
That was the same, basically the same size car as the Chevelle. But it just was amazing to listen to how many of the cars were 64 Chevelles, except the one
GTO.
Poor guy, a 64 GTO. I can't imagine anybody cutting up a fabulous car such as a GTO to make a race car out of it.
It was probably really a Chevelle with the GTO front grille.
It might have had a Pontiac front end on it.
But I thought that was interesting about Rex White coming back to run a late model sportsman race after not racing for a year. You know, after he got out of Grand Astor racing, he raced late model sportsman on and off for a while, and then I guess just had a period where he didn't race, and he came back for this race and finished seventh. But
I noticed a name that has sort of faded into oblivion, and that was Sam McQuaig.
Oh, yeah, Sam McQuaig. Columbus, Georgia.
Haven't heard that name in quite a few years.
We should have Cody on. Sam McQuaig was a big name in Georgia.
Oh, absolutely.
He was a local. He was a hero type of
down
legendary.
In South Georgia, around Tifton, down in that area.
He never really. Well, he got up to Cotton Owens' car one time in NASCAR, but he seemed like his NASCAR career never exactly clicked.
No, he was what I called all the years and also ran. He never was a front runner.
Yeah.
Probably because he never had good high quality equipment.
But Cotton Owens was a fairly high level car at that time.
Yeah.
I guess it just didn't work out. But yes, Sam McQuaig, he was a big local name in Georgia. LD Ottinger would go on to be a big name, period.
Yeah, well, LD was a track champion at Smoky Mountain Raceway, and he also ran for National Point several years.
Yep, James Hilton was in this race.
Yeah, I didn't realize James ran too many late model sportsman races, but I guess he did.
Yeah, and Friday Hassler was always strong in them East Tennessee. He was a hero in that area.
C-Rock City.
Yeah, C-Rock City.
he used to go out in the countryside anywhere in upper state of South Carolina or North Carolina or Tennessee.
Or North Colonia.
And see Rock City painted on barns.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
So that's the way it was.
1968, gosh.
Yep.
How long, coming up on what, 50 years ago?
Yeah, it's been a while. Of course, I stay in the 60s, so doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, Hugh, what you got tonight, bud?
It's a lot better than being in the present day, because the present day is not very pleasant.
Now, what did you want to ask Cody?
We was going to just get him to ad lib on Sam McQuaig, because he was.
Well, he's on, so tell him what you want to ad lib on.
He's a.
Cody's on with us?
Yeah.
Cool.
I'm here.
Hey, yeah, Cody.
We were just mentioning Cody. Sam was giving Jack was giving a Carolina race place, and Sam McQuag was in this field, and we was talking about how you could fill us in on the legendary status of him down in Georgia local racing.
Well, Sam McQuag was a very good modified driver around Georgia. Back, I think he started in the mid 50s, maybe the later 50s, but he had a modified car, and early 60s, I believe, he started to switch to your sportsman type of race car until he came into the NASCAR. And he's the one that we know best for winning with the first car that had a spoiler on it in 1966, the Firecracker 400. And I believe he ran for a few more years after that, maybe until the early 70s or something like that. And then he became a pilot. And then we inducted him in the Georgia Hall of Fame in 2008, I believe.
What was his owner's name back then? Was it Lily something? Lily?
Betty
Lily.
Lily,
yeah.
He was in the Kale Yarborough wreck.
Yeah.
Remember?
Oh, yeah.
Kale
yeah.
Went up.
Well, it went over the fence.
Yeah. Yeah. The Betty Lily, number 24.
And yeah. she was just a fan that decided she was going to buy a race, start a race team.
Hey guys, speaking of, there was another story just like that, and a lady named Mamie Reynolds.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes.
Daryl Derringer drove for her, yep. Same black.
And so did Ed Livingston out of Charleston.
Wonder if she was any of the R.J. Reynolds people.
No, she was not.
But now that was rare as hen's teeth, yeah. In the early 60s,
oh, yeah.
For a woman to be a car owner,
yep.
In NASCAR.
Because they weren't even allowed in the pits, were they?
No.
Unless they had money.
Not period, until, who was it, Darrell Waltrip's wife was listed as the owner on his car, and some poor gate guard told her she couldn't come in. She said, well, car owners are allowed in. He said, yeah, and she just pushed past him. That was the end of that rule.
She probably had shorts on, too. They didn't allow shorts at the time.
I doubt it, because they would flat pick you up and escort you out if you had shorts on, if you had a sleeveless anything on.
Yeah, but that's all that changed.
Well, it has now.
Yeah, but it changed then, too.
But even in the 90s, they would still take you out of the garage area if you had on an inappropriate clothing. And what they considered inappropriate wasn't revealing. It was just like if you had on a sleeveless T-shirt or shorts.
Well, they better not tell Kerry Yarborough about those sleeveless T-shirts. He used to wear them all the time.
Under his driving suit.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Tim, take it away.
Well, I think the first thing we need to mention, in case people don't know it, Paul Lewis is not in good health right now, as I think we've known for a long time. I don't think it's gotten much worse, but I had a report this week that he's not doing exactly well. Another East Tennessee guy, Jeff Hugh Brownie King, whom you know, mm-hmm. is in the hospital. He fell and broke his hip on Saturday, and they had to get his blood work stabilized before they could do surgery. And that was stabilized this morning, and David told me that he did have surgery at 9:30. She told me about 11:45 that he was out of surgery and was in recovery, and I haven't heard from her since. I assume he's doing well. So those are two guys that we can keep at our thoughts and prayers. Also, what you had to say about Sunday's race was, I think, right on point. It was a time. I watched the entire race, and the first however many laps it was, it was no race. It was back to the same old clean air. Let's not get in, blah, 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 blah. But those last two laps and what Kyle Larson was able to pull off, I think was just absolutely fantastic. And, of course, I had to stand up and cheer because of the cars that he was beating.
Yeah.
Now, also, I think we need to look, and I want to call attention to the Randy Myers article that he wrote and put up as a blog, first his part one, and then part two, in which he says, what is wrong with NASCAR from the eyes of an old fart / fan? And his first part, he really gave it a lot of thought. He really put a lot of good information in there. And then he and I exchanged a few things. Then Dave Fulton got into it as well. So I don't know how many responses. Dave Fulton and Randy are doing most of the writing, and I comment here and there. But I think Randy is right on point for what he said so far. Now, he claims he's got a part three coming, and I am putting pressure on him. Ha ha. Catch the sarcasm in that, to get the part three done. I just think it's fascinating that somebody with a historic background in racing that Randy Myers has taken the time to write such a blog and to point out what is wrong with NASCAR in his eyes, and the fact that he wants to see it improve and see it. We know it's not going to go back to the way it was, but he's searching for the answers that it will take to get it back to something that people are going to really appreciate, like we did back in the old days. And yeah, I say that I knew there was somebody else, and Danny Whitener just put it up. Tom Higgins, you know, the motorsports writer for so many years, has had a stroke. I really don't know his condition. I had sent an email to his family this morning trying to find out. And I just got a text from Randy Myers says he's put part three up now, so I'll have to go back and criticize that. But Tom Higgins is really a great guy. I sat beside him at Motorfest 2017 up in Charlotte as we were signing autographs and got to know him really well doing that, I think, 2.5 hours, 2 hours and 45 minutes. And we certainly wish him a speedy recovery. So with all this stuff going on in the medical world and all this stuff going on with Randy Myers, which I'm going to have to keep a tight rein on him, that's about it from my end of the spectrum tonight. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome, Tim. Hugh, did you get yours in?
Kind of, sort of. I think Bobby and I were going to talk about the Myrtle Beach race a little bit. A little bit about the fact that it was Bell and Bell night, and you want to tell about the memorial part of it.
The activities this past Saturday at Myrtle Beach was originally scheduled to be Bell and Bell night from the opening of the season, but then unfortunately as time unfolded, it became a memorial event. For Terry Evans, who was, tragically lost in a traffic accident, just a few weeks ago, and so the event took on a whole different, just a different function, and many race teams and fans and all wanted to participate in some way. It became a fundraising effort, as you can imagine. The Evans family has got some serious medical bills and other things to contend with that will be issues they've got to deal with for a very long time, and it became this event became kind of the focal point of all of those kinds of efforts. And someone said that there must have been 200 race cars Saturday night at the track.
I'd say that was a pretty good guesstimate.
That could be that. What would you say, Jack? That could be true.
Yeah, I didn't really count them, but I mean, shoot, there was 30 in the late models, and there was almost 30 in the Chargers. Yeah. That's 60 right there.
Yeah.
And then they had five other classes, I think.
Yeah. So that could be true. That could have been 200 race cars there.
The infield was packed. It was really hard to find a parking place for anybody.
Yeah, the infield was so full of spectator cars that race cars had a real, because a race car, you're not just parking one vehicle, you got a trailer.
You got a truck, a trailer, and a race car.
And a race car
hanging out the back.
That, so you've got to have room to unload that and operate. So you just can't pull in anywhere. And when we got there, and we was a little bit early for us, there was almost no spaces left in the infield, just literally none. So the infield crowd was almost wall to wall. I haven't heard any kind of figures on the fundraising efforts, but I'm sure it will be impressive, and I'm sure the family is very appreciative. So the racing community, you know, really came together in that instance. There was, of course, the Myrtle Beach Speedway staff was coordinating everything, but also very much in the loop was Ron Barfield, you know, a kind of a rival promoter from Dillon, although I think they see themselves more as we're kind of in the same battle together, and we're not really battling each other. We, you know,
which is a good thing,
right? Which is a very good thing. That, but Ron was street stock race was totally, I think, his efforts, and there was, I don't know, he probably had 20 cars there in that. So it was very good turnout. The meet and greet on the front stretch, which was, you know, the cars were as far as you could see, as was the people that come out of the stands.
Four abreast.
They were four abreast for how many rows? 8 or 10 rows, and then they were they were kind of on each side, the grass side. They were kind of backed in at an angle. All the vintage cars or both sections were there, and then they had a single row all the way down to turn four on the upper side. And there were a lot of cars there, and the house was so packed, and there was so much going on. It, to me, it was almost impossible to count. Maybe it was probably easier for you to see how many cars there were there than it was us on the infield.
So that was a very positive thing, I thought. Yeah. The response, as in any kind of event like that, when something gets that big, you know, organization issues come up and things of that nature, and the shows usually may not always go as smoothly and as precise as you would you would want them to, and that's kind of the
big.
Plus, expected.
There was a little rain earlier in the day too that kind of put them behind.
But for the most part, I think it went off. It was very ambitious, and it ran long. You can imagine
real long.
It ran real long.
How many laps did they run?
Oh gosh,
late models.
Well, there was twin 40 lap races for late models. Twin 40s. There was a 40 lap truck race. There was a 30 lap charger race. A 50 lap street stock race. What else was there? There was a 15 vintage and a 5 vintage.
Yeah, well, it was two vintage races. One 15 lap and one 5.
And a mini stock race.
Yeah, there was a mini stock race. I don't know how many laps it was. Yeah. Too many.
Way too many.
Yeah, probably 20 or so.
Yeah, if it had been 10.
Yeah, because they didn't have but like six cars out there.
It never does, which is a whole different story.
I didn't add all those up. That's a bunch of laps, though.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, they ran a bunch of laps.
Yeah.
We finished up and watched all the racing we wanted to watch, loaded up, and decided, well, we'll go get in line so we won't have to wait so long to get off the track. And we waited, and we waited, and we waited. And I said, well, it'll be a 30 lap, 35 lap. Oh, no, it'll be a 40 lap. Oh, no, it'll be a 45. Oh, no. 50 lap race.
It started at about 12:30 or 12 o'clock. It started at about 12.
What was a 50 lap race?
A street stock.
Oh, okay.
But I thought in the late models it was real, real good that Lee Pulliam changed his number from normal 5 to 35 to reflect the Terry Evans driver.
And didn't they
killed.
Retire Terry's number?
I heard that they were.
I heard that.
There was something I heard on the PA system earlier in the afternoon.
Well, since I couldn't hear the PA system because Myrtle Beach has got the sorriest damn speaker system in any racetrack I've ever been to.
There's a lot of the PA systems leave a lot to be desired at the racetracks. I don't know that I've ever been to one that I thought had a real good PA system.
Absolutely.
Especially
terrible.
If you're on the infield. You can't hear anything.
And I keep thinking in my mind back to when we had Bob Lutz, the owner of Myrtle Beach Speedway, on here about 4 years ago. And I said, Bob, are you going to have a good sound system? We're going to have a state of the art.
Yep. Well, I remember. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Because I remember hearing that.
Yeah.
But all things considered, you know, it was a big night.
Yes.
And I thought it, you know, went.
And I'm very happy for Myrtle Beach to have such a successful night for both the Speedway and Terry Evans.
How big was the crowd in the grandstand?
I was
never in a good place to see the grandstand.
It was big. Probably the biggest crowd I've seen there. I mean, it was big.
That's cool. Good to hear. All right, Cody, what'd you bring us, buddy? Cody. Wake up,
so
Cody.
I had to find the mute button here.
Oh, okay.
So basically, I just wanted to talk about today. I was thinking about what could I possibly talk about. And I saw over the weekend, it might have been late last week, but since last time we've talked, I saw where Chevrolet is going to be racing a Camaro in the Cup Series next year. The Z01, you know, they had the show car, I guess, at the race weekend to show it off, and I thought it looked kind of cool. You know, it may not look exactly like the street counterpart, and I'm not a big fan of the street counterpart anyway, but it does look a lot like it on the front end. Of course, the back end, they can't have the little narrow windows and the curved back end, but I thought they done a pretty good job of trying to recreate the lines, especially the hood, the front end. I think it looks a whole lot more like a car than that SS did that they've been running for the last couple of years. So they're going to run the Camaro SS. I believe they run in the Xfinity Series, and the Z01 Camaro in the Cup Series. So I don't know if that means that we're going to have a Mustang GT in the Xfinity Series.
Getting ready to ask the same question.
Exactly. And I don't know this either, Cody. What is the difference between a ZL1 Camaro and a
Now, I'm not
whatever.
A GM guy, so I'm not going to tell you probably a correct answer, but basically that's like your SS is just your V8, and your ZL1 is your fully track-ready 700 horsepower. I'm not sure what all this nonsense is, but so basically the Z01, I believe, is the highest model of Camaro that you can go, your highest performer.
It's comparable to what they used to call the SAS and a lot of GM cars.
It's kind of like the LT1 in the Corvette. They're all Corvettes, but the hottest one is the LT1, and I think that's probably what they're referring to in the Camaro is their hottest version.
That's a good looking race car.
I agree with you, Cody. It does look a lot more like a street version than some of the things we've seen in recent years.
That's a big improvement right there, man.
If you compare the back end, you know, they can't really I don't think they can model it just exactly like the street version, just because it seemed like the street version is a little bit smaller on the rear end. Your pillars are bigger, but the front end from the door forward, I thought they done a really good job.
Yeah, that thing looks...
Don't you think that it's odd that finally in the Cup Series we now have a two-door rear-wheel drive car that you can technically buy something that looks like it from the dealership?
Hey, Tim, do you
think
they
might be listening to us? So this is the first time since 97 that happened. And I'm curious to see what this is going to do to Ford. If they're going to leave the Mustang GT in the Xfinity Series and maybe move their high-performance Mustang as the GT350, which would be the competitor to that ZL1. So I don't know if they're going to move that up. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but the whole reason I talked about this, because it really made me think of the old Grand American Series, consisted of Camaros and Firebirds and Mustangs and Javelins and even older Cup cars. But I was doing a little bit of research on the Grand American Series this afternoon. There's not a whole lot on it, mostly because it was just around for three or four seasons, and then you had the two seasons of the I believe it's called the Grand National East Division. It used similar types of cars, but I'm really hoping that this can just be in the step in the right direction of having your recognizable cars, because it's no longer just a body with Chevy stickers or Ford stickers. I mean, you can actually tell a big difference, just like I would think you could back in the day with the Grand American Series.
Well, know what else that opens the door for is Dodge to come in with that Challenger.
Let's hope so.
Exactly.
That may be part of the bigger scheme of things to do just exactly like that. And I would welcome it. I think they need Chrysler back in it.
Yes, they do. Chrysler needs
to. Well, NASCAR is talking to them. Apparently, the big shot with Chrysler Fiat has changed his mind and said, yeah, he would be interested in coming back. And I'm sure that's part of the quick approval of the Chevy Camaro is to get that Dodge Challenger back in there.
I think we'll see the Ford Mustang.
Since the Camaro is going to be the car of choice for GM, it only makes sense for the Mustang to.
So what does that mean for the Xfinity series?
Well,
they go back to looking.
Now, Cody, what was it you said? The big car goes back to the Xfinity series. Is that what I understood you to say?
No, the way I understand is that the Xfinity is still going to have the Camaro SS.
Okay.
And I guess they're still going to look the same.
Oh, you said SS.
Because to me, the only thing about the Xfinity car that looks remotely like the counterpart is just the very little front fascia it's gotten. It kind of resembles a Camaro, but it doesn't look like a Camaro, you know. So this new one, I think, really does a good job of looking a lot like the counterpart does.
So let me ask you guys this. I'll go ahead and give my opinion first. I think that's a great step for NASCAR. How much impact will that have? But if you think about it, one of the things that's been wrong for a long time is there's no correlation between the cars they're racing and what you can buy. And like Tim or whoever was said, this is a real rear-wheel drive, two-door car, not something that's been fabricated. I mean, it's been fabricated, but it does represent something that exists. I think that's a major
step. It looks like a production car.
That is very much. But in NASCAR's defense, Detroit hadn't been back into the pony car business too awful long. They are now.
Yeah.
You know, they brought back the Camaro and all that. And so that's good. I mean, since all this ties together. So,
what's that going to leave Toyota with?
That's a good question, Tim.
In fact, they're going to run a RAV4.
Well, you know, that's possible.
That'll be interesting.
I hear Ray Tona is pushing very heavily for the smart car to be allowed to race.
They can have a Prius.
They'll have to put two together to be long enough to meet the wheelbase requirement. A six wheel.
Now, I hate to say it, but Toyota does have a two door car. It's called a Toyota 86, and they made a Subaru version, and there was something else.
I thought they had a Solara.
It's basically like Ford, Lincoln, Mercury. You know, they all built the same car and just call it different names.
Yeah.
But they've got a two-door car. Well,
that Camry,
why they don't use it, I don't know.
Yeah, that Solara is.
I didn't know that. You just educated me to that point, Cody.
Well, they've put a lot of work though into this body they're running right now. The Toyota body was new this year. They ain't going to probably trash that just to stay up with the Camaro.
Well, it looks like, from what we're hearing already, that the face of the Cup Series is going to change quite a bit for next year.
Yeah, and so cars far, and drivers.
Yes, so
and
far.
And sponsors.
I haven't seen anything that disappoints me. Everything that I've seen and heard, it's going to be a leaner version, but I don't see that as a minus. I see that as a plus. I think they were spending entirely too much money and needed to have a day of reckoning, if you will, in that respect anyway. So maybe it's going back. The pendulum is swinging back toward a little more, quote, stock car series like it started out as. I'm personally looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, they had an interview with Dale Earnhardt Jr. last week where he said that, and we know they're probably talking about William Byron and Alex Bowman, are coming in at salaries one-tenth of what his and Casey Kane's were.
Yep.
One-tenth.
So apparently Toyota quit making the Camry Solara last year.
just in time to need to come back. Of course, I'm sure they didn't throw away all their dies. They could.
No, they got them somewhere.
they could put it back into production probably pretty quick.
Probably pretty quick. That would be right.
There you go.
Well, I just got a text that said, all of us are terrible.
Who said that?
Who said that?
It is a he. All you guys are terrible, he says.
Well, that could be worse. Could be deplorable.
All right. What did I say now?
Does he elaborate on the terribleness?
We're terrible.
No, but I wrote him back and said, what have I done now? And I know he's listening, so text me and tell me what I have done.
Or maybe since he's,
must be a
he says y'all, it must mean all of us. It was probably Bopper, since Bopper is the guilty party 9/10 of the time.
Right, probably.
Probably?
Could be.
Anyway, he hasn't texted me yet. So.
Well, let us know how we can smooth out the rough spot.
Yeah, right. So who's Jack?
Yes.
Are you and Coastal Margaret going to go view the eclipse anywhere special?
Well, I have been dragged into it. So the answer is yes.
She's sitting over there.
I know.
She can hear you.
Sitting over there laughing.
Yeah. So we will be in Columbia.
Oh, you're going to Columbia?
Yeah, I'll be in Columbia.
You can see it better
with
there.
The million people they keep saying they've been saying for 6 months is going to be there.
Yep. Are you going to the racetrack? Are you going to Columbia Speedway?
No. I'm going somewhere where I can have a cold beer.
You can't have one at the Speedway?
I have no idea, but I know where I can get one.
How about you, Bopper? Are you going to view the eclipse with your cataracts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the last one in 1970.
It was qualifying at Rockingham, right?
It was on a Saturday afternoon about 1 o'clock. Yeah. I remember it.
They were qualifying at Rockingham, and it went dark.
I had forgot that part, but I remember the occasion.
Was it
the
70
occasion.
Or 74?
It was 70. 70. Well, I didn't have driver's license, but I was going to get them in a couple of months. I remember that. So.
All right, I just got the response. We are all bad because we're picking on those poor Toyotas.
So when was the one before that, before 1970 in the Southeast? I was in grade school. I remember it, but I don't remember the year. So it had to be in the 60s.
I don't remember that.
But anyway, so where are you going, Bopper?
Where I'm always going. I will be on Main Street in Shalott. I'll just walk out the front
walk
door.
Walk out the front door looking.
Do you have the fancy glasses with which to view it?
Remember, you used to make them things with a shoebox?
Yeah. Yep.
I hadn't seen any plans for them this time.
Yeah, that's because they don't have shoeboxes.
I bet you can patent one out of a water pump box.
Yeah. Well, I've sent all them to Dargan one.
How about you, Hugh? You going to watch the eclipse?
I don't even know where I'll be. What time is it supposed to take place?
2 o'clock.
Two in the afternoon.
Don't be late or else you'll miss it.
Yeah, I guess I'll be at home. I didn't get to watch the last one. Thanks to Uncle Sam, they stood us in formation at attention during the thing so we wouldn't watch and damage our eyes.
There you go. That's good. How about you, Tim?
I'll be watching it off our deck because we got a perfect view of everything up there.
All right.
You know, that where the sun will be at that particular time, we got the perfect view right off the deck.
Cody, in the Georgia, is there any, you guys get even the tip of it or anything down there? Do you know?
Yeah, I think we're going to be, I think Dauphin County is right on the very edge of it. So
okay.
They're already letting kids out of school early and businesses are closing and
people getting bread and milk.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the night the lights went out in Georgia.
That's it, man. The day the nights went out in Georgia. Yeah. All right, folks, that's it. It's cool. Fun stuff. Thanks for hanging in there. Love it. All you guys helped put this thing together. We appreciate it. All you folks that don't have anything to do and sit around and listen to us, we just appreciate that even more. As always, we'd like to say special thanks to the men and women serving military. Thank you for doing what you do so that we can do this. Each and every one of you, good night, and God bless everyone. We'll be right back.